when it goes around. This is Interview with Eberhard Riess by Michael Neufeld, November the 8th, 1989, in Huntsville, Alabama. This is tape one, side one. Okay, are you Dr. Riess?
Yeah, Dr. Riess.
Okay, Dr. Riess, can you give me your, for background purposes, your full name, your birth date, your birthplace?
My name is Eberhard Friedrich Michael Riess, and I signed my name Eberhard F.M. Riess.
Your birth date,
birthday is April 28, 1908.
And your birthplace?
Is Trossingen, T-R-O-S-S-I-N-G-E-N.
Where is Trossingen?
Trossingen is in South Germany, in Württemberg.
It's in Württemberg.
In Württemberg. Very close where the Neckar River and the Danube River originate. The biggest cities there is Villingen, Rottweil, Tuttlingen, and it's about 50 kilometers to the Lake of Constant.
Okay, so that's a very beautiful part of Germany. Your parents' occupations? What was your
My father was a president of the high school in Trossingen.
Was that a gymnasium?
Yeah, there's a kind of gymnasium. They have languages there and also Latin. So it was a kind of gymnasium. But not what you call in the United States a gymnasium.
It
has nothing to do with sport. Of course, we had also what we call in Germany, Turnen. Or Langlauf or these things, it was languages is the main.
It was a humanistic gymnasium, was it? Heavily emphasis on languages and not on science?
Yeah, and science, physics was pretty good, and chemistry, and all those things.
So you graduated from the gymnasium. Did you go to the gymnasium where your
father
was?
Well, I went to the gymnasium only until I was about 14. And then I went to Stuttgart, on a gymnasium in Stuttgart, Württemberg. And I was there from 1923 until 1927. And then I had what it's called in Germany, the Maturum.
Is that the same
and,
as...
And when you have the Maturum, then you are able to go to college in Germany or to university or Technische Hochschule, we had at that time. They are now being called universities in Germany.
Right. Is the Maturum the same as an Abitur, essentially?
Abitur, yeah. It's the same.
Did you have an inclination towards technical subjects, science, at the high school level?
No, we had only just on the high school level chemistry and physics.
So you entered university then?
And from there I went to Stuttgart University, but when you want to go to the, at that time it was Technische Hochschule, and before you got there you had to have a practical work. So I worked practically in a company in Stuttgart for a whole year. They asked only for half a year, but I made at that time a whole year at the company of Bosch, famous company, and worked in there in all their departments.
So as a
kind electronics and mechanical and just...
So what you might call a practicum.
A practicum, yeah. And then... I had some more practicums when I was a student in Stuttgart in my vacation with other companies.
What year was it that you worked at Bosch? Was that would have been about 1927, 28, or?
I had the Abitur in 1927, mm-hmm. and then I worked 1 year, 27, 28, mm-hmm. and then I went to the Technische Hochschule in Stuttgart mm-hmm. as a mechanical engineer to become a mechanical engineer.
Mm-hmm. Was that called Maschinenbau or
Maschinenbau?
Okay, so it was a mechanical engineering. Maschinenbau.
Maschinenbau.
Did you specialize in any particular area of Maschinenbau, or mechanical engineering at that time?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. You became a diplôme ingénieur?
I was in Stuttgart from 1928 mm-hmm. on the Technische Hochschule until 1931. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the Technische Hochschule of Dresden in mm-hmm. Saxonia, mm-hmm. which was described to me as very good, especially in mechanical engineering. So I mm-hmm. left Stuttgart in 1931 and went then to the Technische Hochschule in Dresden. And there I made my diploma engineer. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 1934.
Mm-hmm. So that you were finished the diploma engineer degree in 1934.
In 1934, mm-hmm. at the end of 1934. Could also mm-hmm. have been 1935, but I think it was 1934.
Mm-hmm. Did you specialize any further at Dresden in terms of... which institutes you worked with, or subjects you worked with?
It was especially thermodynamics. Mm-hmm. Dresden was especially good in thermodynamics, so I went mainly in thermodynamic lectures. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and I made also my diploma in thermodynamics.
Mm-hmm. Was your interest primarily in... internal combustion engine technology for the application mm-hmm. of thermodynamics?
Mm-hmm. And heat transfer. Mm-hmm. The theoretical heat transfer.
Mm-hmm. As applied to internal combustion engines or diesel engines or more generally?
It was certainly not rockets, but
certainly.
It was internal combustion engines. Mm-hmm. And then also in big boilers for making steam for electricity.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
What's been called in Germany Kraftwerk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Electrical power plants.
Electrical power plant, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in 1934, you finished the diploma engineer, and what was your next, where did you next stop?
Then, of course, at that time, it was rather tough to get a job in Germany. Mm-hmm. It was about the same time when, mm-hmm. Before Roosevelt came here in this country, where it was really economically all down, but mm-hmm. I got a job then in a company in the city of Leipzig.
Mm-hmm. In the year 1934?
In the year 1934, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was in Leipzig with that company until...
39.
Until 1940.
Mm-hmm.
I was with that company in 1940. Ooh. And at that time, I went then to Peenemünde. Mm-hmm. In February 1940, I went to Peenemünde up there. And I got to Peenemünde through a professor of mine in Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. von Braun was very young when they mm-hmm. built and opened Peenemünde. So they felt in Berlin, that was General Dornberger, at that time he was a colonel, that he needed somebody who understands... science, technology, and also business as it's run in companies. Mm-hmm. And so there was a Professor Heidebrock, who then mm-hmm. took a job in Peenemünde as the deputy of Wernher von Braun.
Mm-hmm. His name was Heide?
Heidebrock, Heidebrock. Mm-hmm. And I knew Heidebrock quite well from Dresden, and I knew him also from, he was in Darmstadt for a time, and his son was in Stuttgart and was in my fraternity in Stuttgart. So mm-hmm. we were fraternity brothers, and there I know, and this is also one of the reasons why I went to Dresden.
Mm-hmm. That you knew this fraternity brother of Heidebrock?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This Heidebrock, okay, so he was the son of this Professor Heidebrock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't get the detail as far as the company was concerned, just to fill that block.
Yeah.
You worked for 6 years.
Yeah, the company was a big foundry.
Mm-hmm.
I was not specializing in foundry before, but I had, of course, also foundry courses, and I mm-hmm. also worked practically for some months in a foundry mm-hmm. before I went to the university in Stuttgart. And I just took that job because it was so hard to get a job, so I got mm-hmm. it, and I got it through that Professor Heidebrock, mm-hmm. who knew one of the presidents of that company in Leipzig. Mm-hmm. And it was a very big foundry.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the name of the company, just for the record?
The name of the company was Meyer and Weichelt.
Mm-hmm. Meyer.
Meyer, M-E-I.
Mm-hmm. Was it with an I?
E-R and Weichelt, W-E-I-C-H-E-L-T,
mm-hmm.
Meyer and Weichelt. It was a very famous company and mm-hmm. well-known in Germany at that time. What became to the company now after war, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
But during the war, from Peenemünde, I came down there and they had big contracts during the war, actually. Mm-hmm. And I came down there and visited them sometime, just as a friend.
Mm-hmm. They did, you never got them involved in any Peenemünde contracts?
No, we never got them involved in Peenemünde. Mm-hmm. But they were very good to me, and I really liked to play, stay in that company. But I was interested what they did in Germany, and I got interested to Peenemünde from this Professor Heidebrock.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed an assistant in Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined Heidebrock in Peenemünde in 1940 as his assistant.
Mm-hmm. What was Heidebrock's technical specialty? What was his institute at Dresden?
He was also a mechanical engineer mm-hmm. and a physicist.
Mm-hmm. Was he a technical physicist?
Yeah,
engineering.
He was a technical. He came from technical engineering, and mm-hmm. so he was an engineer. He was not any management man. But later on, when he got up in as a professor, he was first with a company, of course, mm-hmm. in Germany, and he got up very high there, and of course came then into management.
Mm-hmm.
So he understood also technical management very well. That was one of the reasons why they took him to Peenemünde to assist Wernher von Braun.
I know that Dresden, the Technische Hochschule at Dresden, was heavily involved in doing research for Peenemünde after September 1939.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a number of documents from that period which show the assignment of various tasks to various units. Unfortunately, I don't have them here, so I don't remember the names of which professors. Of course, the name Vollmann is familiar to me in electronics.
Well, there were especially mm-hmm. Professors from the University of Darmstadt,
mm-hmm.
because we had a lot of people in Peenemünde from Darmstadt, especially...
What was the name?
Darmstadt.
No, the person you said? Did you mention a specific name from
Darmstadt? Yeah, I can mention a specific name. Was especially Dr. Steinhoff.
Steinhoff,
who was then in Peenemünde our guidance and control man. Mm-hmm. And through him we got a lot of people from Darmstadt, from the University of Darmstadt.
Mm-hmm.
And we had also then quite some contracts with some professors in Darmstadt working for Peenemünde during the war.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that, I think Dresden and Darmstadt probably played the largest role in university contracts. Why do you think that was the case? Was it largely personal connections between people?
It was personal connection with Dresden and especially with Darmstadt.
Mm-hmm.
But in Dresden we had also some good professors with whom I worked at that time. And they had quite some contacts also from Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm. Was Heidebrück... Did he become an employee of Peenemünde, or was he on assignment from the university?
He was only assigned, and after a while, he wanted to go back. He was an older gentleman, and he said, "Then why don't you take my job?" And then the Dr. von Braun had agreed at that time. I knew von Braun quite well, so I was with Heidebrück in Peenemünde about 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then he recommended to Werner von Braun and also the people in Berlin, especially Dr. Dornberger, that I should take that job. And I became then the deputy of Dr. von Braun in 1940.
Do you remember about what month in 1940 that was? When did you come? I guess that was the first part. Can you remember? It was the middle of the year, or
I came to Peenemünde in February, at the end of February 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Heidebrück left in April or so, and then I took his position and became then the deputy of Dr. von Braun.
Mm-hmm. What was Heidebrück's job and your job? What were the different activities that you were involved in?
Heidebrück's job was especially helping Dr. von Braun building up the organization there and so on, because Dr. von Braun was very young and was a physicist and had no experience in running a company. And Peenemünde was probably... He was there as... the president of a company, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so Heidebrück helped them set that up. And I continued then as von Braun's deputy in organizational matters and especially in manufacturing. We had quite a good manufacturing division in Peenemünde. And we made all these first V2s all in Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere else but just in Peenemünde. So we built them up. We had a big assembly plant there. And this was my major job. And then later on during the war, helping another department under Dr. Rudolph, you might have heard that name, setting up a big mass production of the V2.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you know, we developed the V2 in Peenemünde, but at that time when that was ready and was several times shot quite well, we never had developed it as a mass production item. Mm-hmm. And this was then done by this Dr. Rudolph and our place in Peenemünde, that was especially me. And Rudolph was then later on taken away from Peenemünde and was in charge of this underground plant in Middle Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is...
And they made in mass production. Oh, well, they made then the V2 about some 500, 600 or 700 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a production at that time. And this could not be done with a thing which was just designed for development as in the beginning. Mm-hmm. In Peenemünde, so it was later on then developed also quite a bit. and so that it was ready for mass production.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of detailed questions that go right back to the beginning about all of those things. Were you involved at the beginning in recruiting personnel from the universities and companies and other places? Was that part of your job in terms of building the organization? That was somebody else's?
That was somebody else's job, but I selected the people, talked to people about it, and said these people are for this and this and this job quite suitable. Mm-hmm. So I was partially in that thing, but I did not hire those people. That was in Peenemünde also a type of civil service,
mm-hmm.
as we had here.
Right. It was
the civil service rules, I wasn't in that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a personnel office, and they did then the final hiring when we recommended certain people.
Yeah, because
At that time, this was during the war, and many of these people were just drafted. Mm-hmm. We just said we need so and so many engineers in that and that and that field, and these people were drafted and partially came back from the front even.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Ernst Sturinger, he was close to Stalingrad at that time, and he was then drafted for Peenemünde as a scientist and came back.
Well, my first husband, too.
Your first husband, too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was his name?
Haas. Mm-hmm. Dr. Günter Haas.
Mm-hmm. It's a name. It's a name that I know.
And he was drafted. He was in the flux to the... you know what the flux in Germany was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
They got him from there, and he came to Peenemünde. Mm-hmm.
Flak was Flugzeug.
Abwehr.
Abwehr, yeah.
Yeah. Originally meant anti-aircraft gun, but was used also for missile.
Yeah.
And this was then done in the beginning at that time by rocketry, and this is why he came then to Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Haas.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Haas.
Okay. So you came in 1940. You were involved in expanding the organization.
Yeah.
And you discussed. Oh, I wanted to ask these personal questions about people before I get back into the organization. What was your first impression of von Braun? When did you first meet him?
Well,
what did you think at that point, and what did you think of him immediately afterwards?
Von Braun was always just a outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Person, and was one of the most outstanding person I ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it.
Did he strike you that way on the first meeting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did
he run those development meetings and scientific meetings real well right from the outset, and he was in the middle of the things, and he knew the problems of the V2 real well, also the physics of it, and so von Braun struck me right from the beginning as a very outstanding man. And I can say this right here, I think he was probably the most outstanding man I met in my life.
What was his management talent? A lot of people comment on it, but I'd like your comment on it.
His management talent was that he immediately saw the problem. Any problem, no matter it was a technical problem or a problem of science or so, or of organization, he saw the problem right away. And when he made suggestions also to this Professor Heidelberg, his suggestion were always, why don't we do it that way or that way or that way? And he was also management-wise pretty good in understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he had no background in that particular field right away, but he had a deep understanding of a problem. So problem-solving in scientific areas, in management areas, and in many other areas was just his big gift, I would say.
Did he have particular talent in dealing with people?
Yeah. He had also a talent, a great talent in dealing with people. That's why all the people never left, but rather stuck with him and stayed in there. And of course, rocketry at that time was quite new, and it was for engineers a very, very interesting. Peenemünde was for engineers most interesting place.
Mm-hmm. Is that part of the reason for the atmosphere?
Yeah.
Peenemünde, that it was enthusiastic?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The problem seemed incredibly interesting at
yeah.
that point.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear of the rocketry business at all before in the late 20s with Max Valier?
Yes,
and I
knew quite a bit about it. The name of Professor Hermann Oberth. Hmm. He was the big rocket man at that time. He once in a while came to Peenemünde, and he was then also for quite some time later on during the war in Peenemünde. But he was mainly a theoretical man, but he himself also launched quite some small rockets. On some island in the North Sea, he had a rocket place there, and he was there also launching rockets. So he got in technical things also. But he was never good in pipe fitting and this kind of welding he didn't understand. And
I got the impression that when Oberth came to Peenemünde and the early 40s, that he was a little bit at a loss because, in yeah. effect, the technology had gone beyond him and he didn't yeah, yeah, feel yeah. like he fitted yeah. in or
the
something.
I would say the practical technology.
Mm-hmm. You get the impression that he felt somehow a little bit slighted or something, as if he'd been pushed to the side.
Well, mm-hmm. in Peenemünde he had never had a big position or so. And he was also never employed in Peenemünde, as I remember. Mm-hmm. But he came there quite often, and he stayed in Peenemünde for quite some time. But I don't believe that he was ever an employee of Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell that for sure, but mm-hmm. I don't believe it.
I think he was, but he had a minor position and patent. Says
yeah.
in patents or
yeah.
something.
He was had a minor position. He was not head of some department or something like this.
Mm-hmm. Had the what I call the fad for rocketry in the late 20s with the moon move, you know, the moon flight movie, Max Valier, did that make any impression on you at that time?
Or yeah.
Did it strike you as feasible?
Yeah. Struck me as feasible.
Mm-hmm.
And for von Braun, then later on, going to the moon was always a thing which could be made soon. And von Braun was still alive here when we were in 69, landed on the moon. When Neil Armstrong and his people landed on the moon, he was still alive at that time. That was in 69. But he was not with us anymore in Huntsville at that time.
I think he was just left after it. Just after.
Yeah, he left after that, yeah. I got his position here in 1970. Yeah, so he left in December 69, 70 January, and I got his position here in January or February 1970.
Mm-hmm.
As the president of Marshall Space Flight Center.
Director, yeah, center director, a very important
center
position.
Director, yeah.
Did he speak about space flight at much during the war years?
Yeah.
When you first met him at all private basis?
He spoke quite a bit about space flight. As a matter of fact, he had really trouble with the German government at that time, that he spoke too much about space flight and not. He was accused for quite some time, and even well, thank you. That was now the third one I had in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was accused that he were talking too much about space flight and this kind of things. And not take care too much about the V2 production and this. Mm-hmm. During the war, he had quite some trouble. And Dr. Dornberger, who knew him very well, he got him out of that. So von mm-hmm. Braun, I wouldn't say he was in jail, but he was in detention. He was away from Peenemünde for, I think, at least a month or 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I was in charge, and Dornberger got him then away again. This was the SS. The SS never liked von Braun for some reason. Himmler, who was the boss of... they all felt that von Braun was not a Nazi and was internally anti-Nazi. He never expressed himself for that, but they all felt he was... he was never liked by the Nazis too much.
Mm-hmm. Could you... was that visible earlier? I mean, the arrest was in March 44, and it certainly mixed up, according to him, with having been asked by Himmler to go over to the SS and refusing to do it not long before that time. Did you notice that earlier on, that von Braun, like 40, 41, 42, any time in that period?
Yeah, I noticed.
Von Braun was distrusted a little?
I noticed this all the time, that von Braun was never in these Nazi meetings or... I noticed this right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Were there party meetings on the Peenemünde area of some people?
Yeah, there were party meetings in Zinnowitz and in all those other places which were there. There were party meetings. And we had also a man in Peenemünde, one of our engineers, who was in charge of this, I forgot the name, what it was called at that time, of a Nazi group or a government group, I would say, at that time. But he himself, that man, was also not a great Nazi. I knew him real well because he worked with me internally, and once in a while he had said, well, I have to have one of those meetings again. But he was never a great Nazi. Peenemünde was never a big Nazi place.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Hitler was never in Peenemünde. Göring came up there several times, I guess, and some other big Nazi people, but Hitler was never in Peenemünde.
That's true. Mm. I know that most of the people in the top ranks were more or less obliged to join the party because you were expected to, you know, to do that. Was that... did most of the people at the top ignore party meetings and so forth? That they had more pressing things to do? Did they avoid the party meetings and things like that? Because, you know...
I do not know anybody in Peenemünde of the engineers who was a member of the party. For instance, I was not a member of the party, and there was not great pressure.
Mm-hmm.
This was also another... if von Braun would have been a big Nazi, he would have looked at those people who joined the party. But
mm-hmm.
we were not politically in that mm-hmm. whole nationalist mm-hmm. Partei.
I'm curious about this. I don't want to press you on it if you don't want to speak about it. But I'm curious as to who was and who... from the lower levels. I mean, in other words, those meetings in Zinnowitz and places like that, they were mostly lower-level people, do you think?
Yeah, they were lower-level people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember anybody who was a real, real big Nazi there.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
There were military there. There was
Yeah, it was rather military. And since Dornberger was the boss, and he became later on, he was a colonel in 1940 when I came over there, but he became then a general in this particular rocket field. But I don't believe that Dornberger was a party member or so. And we never talked about this whole area. Of course, Dornberger saw Hitler several times, and Hitler was interested, of course, what we were doing and making that V2 and so on. And we were interested in engineering and scientific work, and not in any political.
Okay, I asked you about von Braun. What was your impressions of Dornberger when you first met him?
Well, Dornberger, of course, was the big boss in Berlin. And he came very often to Peenemünde, and he was especially interested technically also. Dornberger had a doctor's degree and had a technical background, and he was especially interested in that whole development. So he came very often to Peenemünde, and I felt always that he was a great person. He was different than Dr. von Braun was, but Dornberger was... I admired him quite a bit.
As a personality, would you say he was a Depression officer type in the way he carried himself? And
no, he was not an officer type in that sentence. He was interested in technical things, and he was during the war never in the field or so as an officer. He had, of course, the boss of Peenemünde in Peenemünde was an officer. That was Zansen, Leo Zansen. And Zansen also was this type of guy who never was a Nazi. whatsoever, you know. We knew Zansen real well, and I lived in Peenemünde directly at that plant.
The Siedler?
As a bachelor.
Not in the Siedler.
Zansen had his house there too, as the boss of Peenemünde, and Zansen was directly under Dornberger.
He was directly under Dornberger as...
Directly under Dornberger.
As base
and
commander.
I think they knew each other even from university.
Yeah, Zansen is someone I'm interested in. I, in fact, met his daughters in Hamburg a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
They were, of course, still... They're still a bit bitter about the way he was driven out in May 1943. But do you know anything about that that whole incident when he was removed
you mean
in 1943?
Zansen. Well... the mistake Zansen made when there was a party, and we had quite some parties. When people from Berlin came, we always made a party. And Zansen, after a couple of drinks, he just said, I'm against Hitler. and Zansen was very outspoken. Very outspoken. I sometimes thought in that I was this party as two at times that, for heaven's sake, what Zansen said again hurt quite a bit during that. Zansen was really, Dornberger was much more skillful in these things. And Zansen, after a drink, he just...
he said...
And this was the reason why he was finally removed, and Dornberger could not hold him.
Do you remember any specifics about when that came up, or did it all come up as a rather big surprise to you, that all of a sudden Zansen was gone?
I was surprised that it came about, because I thought Dornberger would have strong arm enough to hold him. But it was just not possible, and I only learned later on a little bit more about it.
What did you learn later? Do you about the specific?
Well, I learned later on that at Sanson, I should give up this position in Peenemünde and just had to go to the troops, and he was then a general, I think, of some military division, very close to Moscow even. I think he went deep into Russia.
Mm-hmm. I got the impression, and I haven't been able to get the story straight, that he had taken a leave and had gone to the Russian front once already in 1941, 42. Do you remember anything like that?
No,
that he had served in the forces before?
No, I don't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm. So you don't remember him being gone for a while in that period? There's no recollection of him being gone? You had no recollection of that he was gone
no.
some earlier point
no,
before he was pushed out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have any recollection. And I think he was not gone while I was in Peenemünde.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1940. February 40, I got to Peenemünde, and from that, Johnson was the boss all the time, and I don't believe he was gone until he was relieved.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember Lieutenant Colonel Stegmeier,
yeah.
who was the head of the development works in Wicklungsweg?
Yeah, he was on the Thornburger in Berlin. Stegmeier, I do not know whether he came then finally to Peenemünde or not, after Johnson had left.
I have an organizational chart that shows him as Johnson's immediate deputy in Peenemünde in 1942.
1942, yeah. Yeah, that could be. But Johnson came from Stegmeier came from Berlin.
Do you remember his first name? Because I don't even have that base. Stegmeier's first name.
Oh, I should know, because he was a fraternity brother from me in Stuttgart. I knew him from Stuttgart. Already.
Really?
Yeah,
he
yeah.
Went back
I knew him from
long?
Stuttgart, and then. Stegmeier. I wonder whether I could find out what his first name was.
In any case, could you describe him, what you thought of him at the time?
Yeah. Stegmeier was not the type of character von Braun or Dornberger. He was a little bit lower in his... I would say the word intelligence is not the right thing, but...
ability?
Yeah, he was his ability. He was a pretty good man. He was a good manager. He also technically knew quite a bit, and he was a doer. When something was then said finally by Dornberger, so it should be done, then Stegmeier was behind it. And Stegmeier knew quite a bit in the field of manufacturing also.
Did you know him at the time? I mean, he's been described, for example, by one book as an enthusiastic Nazi type. Is that a fair charge?
No, I don't believe so. But he might have been a member of the party. I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
We never talked about that either.
Mm-hmm. So that he never struck you at that time as having
no.
expressed those kind of sentiments.
No.
Because I know, in fact, for a fact, that he had very good connections in the SS.
That could have been, yeah.
That he had connections with the top of the SS.
Yeah.
Some other members of the team.
But he was never a member of the SS, so
mm-hmm.
I don't believe so.
He has the... You know, he was not liked by some other people in the team, I
yeah.
gather, because they told me that.
For
one person here in town told me that he had the reputation as being an SS spy among some people. I wonder if that was
this is not,
after the fact.
No, this is not
knowledge
true.
After the fact.
This is not true.
Mm-hmm. So that was something that didn't strike you at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I have to stop because the tape is running out on this side.